I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
This episode is brought to you by Paramount Plus. Get in, loser! Mean Girls is now streaming on Paramount Plus. Join Katie Heron as she meets the plastics and Tina Fey's new twist on the modern classic. Get ready for more of the rumors, backstabbing, and jokes you loved from the original movie with some fetch surprises. Rated PG-13. Wear pink and head to ParamountPlus.com to try it free.
What's going on, everybody? Hope you are having a wonderful week so far. Before we get into the podcast, I'd love it if you could hit subscribe. Just allows the podcast to keep going, gets more people involved as well. So on this week, we have the one and only Wax Motif. I've known Wax for a while. I remember meeting him on Holy Ship years ago for the first time. I think that was actually my first Holy Ship I did. And we've kind of always been in touch for over the years, and bumped into him in the airport the other day. I hadn't spoke to him for a while. Obviously, COVID kind of gets in the way and lose touch of people. But it was really good to catch up. And he told me that he'd just recently released his new album called House of Wax. And I've seen his career grow over the years, and at the point now where he's just on another level, which is so nice to see. So I wanted to get him on the podcast and start talking. So, without further ado, Wax Motif. Wax Motif, what's cooking, man?
What's up, baby?
You all right?
I'm all right, man. Bit of a long day, long weekend.
Yeah, but what happened?
So I had I was in Birmingham, Alabama, and they basically oversold every single flight. And even with my status, it just, the system like fucked it all up, and like basically didn't let me on the first flight because they oversold it. They didn't have another flight out for me, so I was on standby for the next two flights. And then I got to Dallas for my layover, and then that flight got delayed by 12 hours. So it was like over 24, like, man, probably closer to 30 hours to get home from Alabama.
That's rough, man. American Airlines is like fucking everyone right now.
Yeah, I was always really about them until this weekend. Like, they really...
I had it.
Did some damage.
I had it two or three weekends in a row where they cancelled my flights, like completely cancelled them, like leaving Detroit or something. And then they like, it's just so annoying when you wake up and you're like, oh, your flight's been cancelled. What can we do?
Dude, the worst. The worst. We're back. do they compensate you for shows if you miss them?
No.
Really?
I didn't miss it. I've not, touch wood, I've only ever missed one show because of a cancelled flight in my whole career.
And they didn't, that was their fault, and they didn't do anything about it?
No.
Damn. That's cold. I feel like you could like charge them the amount you lost.
Yeah, I don't know how that works though. Because it's like, they always just make excuses, and in their terms and conditions, they've always got their asses covered, haven't they?
Yeah, probably.
Motherfuckers. How's life anyway? How's LA?
Life in general is good, man. Yeah. LA's cool. I don't know. It's you know, it's kind of maybe a lot of people have left now, like since pandemic, but I don't know. It's still all right. Like,
it's doing its thing.
Yeah. But yeah. I don't know. It's not anything. I think now with working remotely, like it really doesn't matter.
Do you like the whole working remote?
I like working remote, but like, I think there's like interactions you can have where it's like just more casual in LA and it's not necessarily all about work. Like it's easy to go hang out with someone and like not work, you know? So I think that's kind of like a valuable part of it. You know what I mean? Just being close to everybody. And I don't know.
Yeah. I miss doing in-person sessions.
That, and I play football with some DJs and shit, you know what I mean? So it's like, that's probably like one of the main reasons I like it here is like just having like a group to play sports with, and, you know what I mean? Like do shit on that. They're on the same time schedule as you.
Yeah.
So they're not trying to do everything on a Friday night or Saturday night. You know what I mean? It's like, okay, yeah, I can get down with that. So
I guess that's the great thing about LA is that you have so many people in our industry there. Like even if it's not in dance music, it's in music in general and our hours are all the same.
Exactly.
Whereas like when you like, let's say for instance Detroit where I live, you don't really get much of that. Everyone's kind of on that 9-to-5 grind.
And I can imagine in winter it's probably pretty slow, but probably great for studio.
People hate life in the winter here. I love it.
Yeah, man, it's fucking freezing there, bro. Fuck.
It just started snowing today actually. But
Jesus,
I quite like the cold, and it kind of brings a different. It's the thing that I find with LA, is it's just the same all year. Like I know it gets hotter and it gets a bit colder, but it's like pretty much you can guarantee it's the same all year. And for me, like being in a situation where I'm in the same all year, I'm like it doesn't give me anything to look forward to, or it doesn't give me anything to like change my kind of vibe up.
I think you're more like productive there.
I think I'm more productive in the UK, if I'm honest.
Really?
Yeah. I think I'll be completely honest, I've been so unproductive for the last like 6 months, I would say. It's like my least unproductive time I've ever been in my whole career with writing.
I've been
music.
A little like that recently.
What do you think it is?
It's just not that much inspiring stuff. To be honest, you know?
Yeah, so. I guess for me is like, I know what I want. I know where I want to, I don't fully know where I want to go, but I know what the plan is. Well, I know the end goal, but now for me, it's just like working out the bits in between.
Yeah.
And the thought of it all is like, I think I'm overthinking everything.
Yeah, that can happen.
I mean,
you must have the same thing where your like biggest records were the ones you kind of just weren't really thinking too hard about, right? So,
yeah, I think that's everyone's. I guess
that's
big,
the common.
Yeah, which when you're trying to do like work more conceptually, it's kind of tough. But it's such a weird mindset that for artists, though, right? The whole biggest. You need a big record and that pressure that we put on ourselves. It's like, what's your process when you go into the studio on just your mindset, not necessarily what you do, but like your mindset of like when you're, let's say for instance, your latest album. Like I know I was talking to you in the airport and you were like, this was just a bunch of records that I had and that were probably never going to come out. So you just put them out as an album. I know that was probably massively a quick description of it all, but how do you get out of that mindset of, is this going to be a big record?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think there's only been like once or twice where I finished something and I knew it would do well, but for the most part, everything that's done the best for me, like really caught me off guard.
Yeah.
So because of that, I kind of like try to keep that ethos of like, I don't think about anything and I just go. Mm-hmm. And like, I think that's why I tend to make stuff in so many different genres, is that like, I don't try to limit myself to like, okay, if it's starting to sound techno, right? Like Divided Souls, yeah, then that's where it's going. And like, I don't try to hold that back in any way. And I kind of just wait, like, once I finish the record, I kind of let it sit for like a little while. And if I can go back and listen to it and I think it's hot, then like, then it kind of like, I start thinking about what I can do with it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I don't know, like, cause I guess I'll have a different process when I'm doing stuff for me and when I'm doing stuff for other people. So like when I do stuff for other people, it's like way more relaxed. Like, yeah, I actually more about like, just like letting them kind of like dictate direction a little bit and let them kind of tell me what they like. And I just try and work that into what I do. But
purely
when it's for me,
is that purely like on an engineering basis or like where someone's
mainly as a producer.
Yeah.
Mainly as a producer, but yeah, I don't know. Like when it comes to stuff for myself, it's just a case of like finishing it, I play it, it goes off, you know, and kind of put it through the paces and like see.
Yeah.
And then from there, send it to homies. If it starts going off, then we start ramping it up and like all that shit. So
yeah, the whole it was weird because, and I still haven't got back into it because there's still so many DJs that aren't actually DJing because of like Europe still not fully open and things like that. But I think during COVID, we all realized how important it was to get your records played by your mates and how much that changed the whole kind of game of releasing music, because there's no hype behind a record.
Yeah. Yeah. Another part I noticed, like I kind of just noticed this week, is like a lot of those social media channels, like minimal tech lovers and stuff, you know what I mean? Like those pages. And like, if all those pages post you a lot, like you just start getting traction. Yeah. Like that Mochak dude from like Brazil. I don't know if you've seen like his videos. You know what I mean? Yeah. But like if you look at who's posting the videos, they're not coming from his account. They're coming from like all those like minimal lovers, baseline lovers, like all like EDM lovers, like all those kinds of accounts.
The thing that a lot of people don't realize as well is you pay to get on those.
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely a lot of paid ones for sure. Yeah. But yeah, I definitely think a combination of having your mates play records and like kind of getting on that algorithm right now is probably like the best kind of social mix. I don't know.
Do you find your social platforms actually make a difference of your on your streaming though?
They do, but I'm like personally like a little tired of it all, you know. And so like I've kind of like, I wouldn't say take a step back, but like it's not like a focus for me anymore, like as much as making sure my Spotify streams are up.
Yeah.
So like I'll look at other people now and like they'll have way more followers than me on IG and like less plays than me per month on Spotify.
Yeah.
And that's kind of my focus now. I mean, I'm still active on social media all the time, but like it's just, I don't know, it's just like,
it's tiring.
It started becoming a dangerous place for me. Yeah. Like this is just personal, you know, like everyone's at a different spot, but like all through pandemic, I didn't really feel like I like went offline, you know what I mean? If anything, I went more online and I was streaming. I was like, you know, really active. I mean, still active in my Discord, but just a lot of it went online, and like coming out of that, I guess I felt a little burnt out and just trying to juggle everything at the same time. It's still a focus, but I'm not trying to be like, I got to post every day. I got to do this. I got to do that. I got to do that. Like you really, I mean, it works, but you don't, you know what I mean? Like you could be Porter Robinson and net post and still be popular in the music scene.
Yeah. I came to this. I literally was listening. Have you heard of a podcast called Tape Notes?
No.
It's really interesting. It's very much on the geekier side of production. But it's this dude that, I forgot his name, Tim Kennedy or someone. He sits down with producers and artists, the producers and the artists of like an album at the same time. and kind of they talk about the process. And I've just been listening more and more to them. And I came to a realization last week that, like, yeah, pretty much what you just said is that at the end of the day, it only matters about the music. If you write a record that's like no one can get away from, if you know what I mean, it's just there. It's just so good that everyone has to pay attention to it. Let's say, for example, like the most recent one that I could kind of come to head is that A Craze record.
Yeah.
Like it just built so much traction that you couldn't get away from it.
Yeah.
Like that wasn't based on him having amazing socials. That wasn't based on him having a huge career beforehand. That was just purely based on the record being great. And I know there's a massive balance between, like, we need a social following and we need those things. So I'm not saying, like, just fuck it all off. But what I'm saying is, like, if you can take the pressure off that and stop looking at the numbers and just write great music, it will eventually come. It will all eventually come to you if you just keep pushing on.
100. And like, even if you're not that popular, right, or like whatever, like I have an example now where like Solomon has been playing my record Divided Souls like every night, basically. So I'm getting videos like every night right now. Mm. And like the record's 2 years old.
Yeah.
And like, we're not promoting it to him. We're not promoting it really like that. Like, you know what I mean?
So yeah.
It's more that like, I guess it's a good record and like he found it and still thinks it's playable. You know what I mean? It's not like, doesn't sound dated, doesn't sound whatever. So like, who cares? Time is just like when it came out, like the time is just a construct, right? It doesn't really matter. Like if it's a good record, it's a good record. So yeah, when I see things like that, that makes me go, okay, like, you know, you're doing something right.
Yeah.
Because like it's playable by like a fucking techno legend 2 years later. And I don't even make techno real. You know what I mean?
That's what I was going to say. Cause it's like, from what you're technically known for, like that, you wouldn't cross those two worlds, but they do cross over if it works for the artist that's playing it. Right.
Yeah. So for me, like, cause I am producing like other shit too. It's like anything with a 4/4 kick.
Mm.
Like that to me is like, I mean, that's kind of what house is to me, you know, like records with the 4/4 kick. I mean, I know like stylistically it could be different, but it's progressive house, it's Dutch house, it's bass house,
still
it's
house music,
fucking tech house. Bruv, it's all fucking house. Like we're using the same hi-hats, we're using the same drums.
Yeah.
So like, I don't know. For me, that's how I define it, right? Like, and then from there, it's kind of like, does it fit in my set?
Yeah.
You know, and I play Divided Souls every night. So yeah, for me, that works for me. Yeah. And the thing is, I never made the record being like, oh, I need every techno guy to play this. You know what I mean? Like really was just made out of like following a vibe and then sitting on it for ages. And then I finally showed one person, I think Chris Lake.
Yeah.
And he was just like, yeah, give me the WAV like now. And then he played it. And then the next day Fisher's texting me. He's like, give me that now. And it's like, yeah, it's kind of like all you need to do, I guess, is make good records. And if you can get them in the hands of the right people, which is the hard bit for the young dudes, you know, that's all it can be. But I know like people like Snake, you know, they do the same thing. When he had the big record, he would like go out to Miami with USBs and be giving them out to everybody. Yeah. Kind of what I did back in the day, you know, before I got on. Me and my mates from Australia would fly to Miami every year for WMC.
Yeah.
And we would just run around trying to get agents, trying to get managers, trying to hand out demos and everything. So
it's super important at the end of the day. And the best thing now is that we have social media, so you can literally message your favorite artist. Like,
so much easier.
So much easier.
So much easier.
Can you remember the Black Book?
TV show?
No, so there was an industry thing called Black. I think it was like DJ Mag or Mix Mag did it, and it was called the Black Book. And it had like every artist, every record label, every like management company, every agent was in that Black Book, and you had to pay for it every year. And it would like get updated.
Oh, interesting.
And you could
like Yellow Pages.
Literally, it was. Yeah, yeah. And it was sick. Like, obviously before social media, it was like around when email, I think MySpace was probably around. But yeah, you had to kind of go through that, and then like email, you had people's email addresses and email people, and then it was just like hard. Like, it wasn't as easy as it is. Like now, like, you can message anybody, and if they look at their DMs, so they're going to message back. I hope they do anyway.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I mean, a strategy could be like you film yourself playing it and the crowd's going off, and you send that video in the DM to a big DJ, you know? It's like kind of proof. Like, yeah, okay, maybe they hear a record, go, I don't know, might work, might not. But if you see it working, like, yeah.
And the amazing thing with social media now, you can run ads and you can do all of that. Yeah. So, like, even if you've got like $500, $1,000, you can like do a lot of damage with like one video. If you've got one video of like, let's say for instance, like Solomon playing your record, and you haven't ever signed a record, and it's just an off chance that he's playing a record of yours. Like, which happens. That's how most of our careers start. It is by that. Yeah. If you can put some cash behind it, some of your savings, like, that can do some serious damage. Like, look at Michael Beebe. Like, obviously he had Solid Grooves and his fucking put the work in that. But a lot of Michael Beebe's career, I would say, is based off Hanging Tree videos. Of people just playing Hanging Tree or him playing an after party, and like,
yeah,
the same with Salado back in the day. I know they would put so much money behind posts, and it's just a case of just being in the public eye all the time. Same with that Molchek guy; he's just always there. Every time you scroll, he's there, and you can't always get away from that.
Insane.
Can't get away from that. But then it's like. How do you balance that between, because that's not being an artist, that's being a businessman or businesswoman.
Yeah. Yeah. You have the good song first and then work on the strategy, you know?
Yeah, man. How was it writing the album?
It was cool. I mean, a lot of those sessions, they were like very organic, you know?
Yeah.
Like none of the songs I did on that was a situation really where it was like, you got to do this with this person because X, Y, Z, you know what I mean? It was all, there were all things I wanted to do. And there were all songs that I made with like friends. And I think that's honestly for me, the best way I work is with my friends.
Yeah.
Like I can go do random sessions, but I don't enjoy them, you know? And every time I'm with my friends, I'm just making better music because I feel I'm more relaxed, or I feel like there's no pressure to do anything, you know?
Yeah.
So I got one record on my album. It's called Live for the Night. It's like the R&B one. It's like, you know, full vocal, very pop produced. And that whole thing is like a freestyle. Like we made the beat and tracked all the vocals in like 2 or 3 hours. Nice. Just because like four of us were like jamming out together in a studio, you know, and we're like, let's start laying this down. And that's all it was. So I think that's why I like those. The records I chose all have that feeling to me. Like, they're sentimental to me, you know what I mean? And like, they were just, it's a way to kind of bookend like a period for me or like a certain music I made for like the last X amount of years. And I feel like I can go forward now, like internally a bit better.
Yeah. So was it more of like a closure? Where you're like, you have all these records and you were like, okay, I want to move on, but I have all of this and I want the world to hear it, rather than sitting down and going, I'm writing an album.
Yeah, I mean, I guess because we end up, so I mean, the short story is this was all kind of meant to happen pretty much pre-pandemic.
Okay.
So like going into pandemic, if anyone was following me then, like I was on a great run. We had like a shit ton of, like we had a big tour we were about to announce the album, and then it all got shut down. And like, I mean, God, I think I lost, like I had like almost $1 million worth of shows canceled. So it was pretty depressing. You know what I mean? Like I was pretty bummed out because I was like, I'm finally getting there. Yeah. Like I'm finally hitting the strides I want to hit. Everything's falling into place. Like, and then that hit. So, when that did, I was obviously bummed out, but then I was like, okay, well, if you don't get up and start doing shit, you're going to lose it all. Mm. So that's why I really went into Twitch and did all that. And then coming out of that, I mean, everyone's just trying to work out what we're doing again. You know exactly. what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So we had maybe 6 months, 8 months of just, yeah, some shows were going somewhere.
Yeah.
Like other countries were on, other countries were off. It's like, that's not the environment to drop an album anyway. No. And then we waited. And I mean, that's pretty much till now. It brings us till now. Like, I mean, 8 months and then maybe another 4 or 5 months. Mm. Like we decided, okay, let's get it back together. Let's take some records off. Let's put some records on. Yeah. Like It's a Vibe. On that was obviously like one of the later additions to the album. But yeah, it was, I mean, we definitely hit a point like 3 months ago where I was like, do you still want to drop this? And I was like, well, maybe no, because stylistically everyone just cares about tech house now. And like the easy thing to do would have just been to
make
the same shit.
Yeah, yeah.
Sample the same vocals and do it. That would have been the easy way out, you know? For me, it was just like, nah, I need to do this shit for me.
Yeah.
So we obviously, you know, went back and put all the records that were meant to be on it on, which had come out as singles over that period of time. And then added some new ones, added the Not As Dance ones.
Yeah.
Which, yeah. I mean, honestly, a lot of those decisions weren't really because of me. Like originally I had, like, it was all predominantly house.
Yeah.
And techno. And I sent it to Lorenzo. And Loz was like, man, what are you doing? Like, he's like, you got so much other shit. Like, put something different on there too. You know what I mean? So it was because of him I put the R&B stuff on there. And then there's another record on there called Waiting. It's like a UK garage, like straight up UK garage.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, I only put that on because of Dombreski. Because I sent my album to Dom, was playing him some other bits. You know, I'm just playing him bits. Like, what do you like? What do you not like? And he's like, what are you doing with that song? And I'm like, fucking nothing. He's like, put that on the album.
Yeah.
And I was like, really? He's like, bro, it's fire. It's fire. He's like, I would listen to that every day.
Mm.
And when the album came out like 2 weeks ago, he like was calling me. He was like, bro, you put it on. You put it on. Like, he was more excited than me. It was on there. So a lot of those decisions weren't just me. You know what I mean? Like it was me bouncing back and forth with my friends and them going, dude, you have the ability. You have the records. And like, Loz's reference was like when he did his album, one of the highest streaming songs was the hip hop track that he has on there. He's like, it did really well for me. And like, who cares? You know what I mean? Like, it's not that deep.
I think
that's why I kind of took that approach.
I think that's the good thing about an album as well, right? It allows you to actually do what you want to do. And
yeah, I think
it doesn't have to. Yeah, it doesn't have to all be based on the dance floor or anything else. And let's be honest, like, out of all of your fans, how many of them listen to non-dance floor stuff on a regular basis? Probably every single day.
Yeah, that's how I feel.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, my people know me for peak time club music, but like, I didn't have songs until now I could go home and listen to in the car on the way home or like the right after party. Like, I don't know. I just tried to make an album for like the whole day, not just for one part of the night. You know what I mean?
But I think that's the thing. That's what we do, right? Is because the way our industry is that we write music. Why do we write music? The music realistically nowadays doesn't make us any money. In the grand scheme of selling records, right? It's more of a business card to get us shows.
Mm-hmm.
So what gets us shows? The records that smash because everyone's playing them because they work in the club. And then, so that's what we do. We write smashes that do really well in the club that then gets us shows. So I guess writing an album allows you not to have to do that. You still have your smashes on the album, but they're just the 3-4 singles that you were going to put out anyway as throughout the year. And then everything else can be the body of work to show who you actually are as a producer.
Yeah, that's how I feel, man. I guess it's just hard, like, when press outlets like don't understand that. Like, everything on a press end has to be like, oh, so you made a decision to do this, this, this. Mm. And for me, it's just like, bro, I chose records I fuck with that I made. Like, it ain't that deep, you know what I mean? And like, I'll go back to dropping club singles in a few months.
Yeah.
But like, where I was at in my career was like, I mean, you know, I'm not like a new artist. Yeah. So I have been putting out club singles every year, every few months. Like, I had run that cycle for 5 years almost, like running that hamster wheel. And I was like, fuck, dude, when can I do something for me? You know what I mean? Like, when can I just drop some shit because I like it? Not because it's going to fucking be number one on Beatport, you know? So I don't know.
Yeah, it's a tough one because we have to do both, right? But there's very few artists that are allowed to step out of their confines of their genre. Or they don't have a genre, which I don't think is a bad thing. I think it's just the people know what they want, right? If you go to a rock artist for a rock record, you'd go to a house artist for a house record. That's kind of what we do as human beings.
Yeah.
But I personally think albums are coming back. I have a feeling that there's going to be more albums kicking around and will allow people to actually like get more into who the artist is personally. Because I think with social media and kind of streaming and Twitch and Discord and all of that is that it's actually more about becoming more personable to your fans and your fans getting to really know who you are. And you might not have as many, but you have a stronger following that's like a stronger core following. And I think
for me,
I just mean generally.
Oh, generally. Yeah. For sure.
I think people,
for sure. I feel like I built my career like that.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't need the most fans. I just need like the most dedicated fans. Yeah. You know? So
the ones that are true fans, like the ones that are actually gonna support everything you do and
100
and get it. And I think it's all very well having a massive hit record, but I think you gain a lot of fans from that, but they're not necessarily true fans. They just like that one record from you.
Yeah.
Well, I think building foundations is really much more important than one hit record. Would you say you've had a hit record?
I mean, not like do it to it, but I think I've had hit records for my scene, you know? Like, I mean, at one point, Fly Kicks was probably, I mean, it still is almost the number one selling night bass record.
Yeah.
If you look at AC and Loz's profiles, because the original song's theirs, I mean, it still sits up in their top five tracks for both of those artists. I feel like Wet probably was pretty big for our scene. I don't think I had hits, but I think I had like underground hits.
Underground. Did you notice a change in your career after those records?
Yeah. I mean, especially coming up in the time that Night Bass was starting, you know what I mean? Like being part of that whole spark, because I mean, we'd been friends with Aaron for like years.
Yeah.
So it never seemed like, it wasn't like everyone sat down one day and we were like, let's all team up. You know what I mean? And do something new. It was like shit that, I mean, if you looked at like the fidget scene and shit, like when Jack Beats came out of that and Sindon, it's basically like after a gap, the next evolution of that. And that's why you had AC leading that charge, because he was in that circle back then with Sindon, Jack Beats, Drop the Lime. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They were all like they had him and Drop the Lime at Treble and Bass. Mm. And so It never seemed that weird to just all be hanging out and doing shit together. But being part of that initial thing and having like a big record to kind of go with it. I mean, I feel like I got away with murder almost, because like half the dudes had way more output, way more original records. And I kind of just skated in with a remix. And like, I think I did two singles on Night Bass, like one with AC, and then I did like a two-track EP. But like, you know what I mean? It was really all Fly Kicks. I could have just done Fly Kicks and probably would have got the same. But yeah, it's almost like getting away with murder. Like I, you know, I, at the same time, it's like it could have been my original record. You know what I mean? And it could have maybe made me more money. Maybe could have gone further, but it maybe couldn't have. I don't really know. But
You never know, dude. That's the amazing thing about this industry. 90% of it is fucking luck.
Yeah, exactly. But I think the cool thing is that, like, you know, even for a remix, like AC and those guys, like, went back and like looked after me on the splits and shit.
So totally.
That was cool. Yeah,
it's amazing what
they didn't have to.
It's amazing what that crew's doing right now as well. It's like
they're so cool, man. They're solid, bro. Like, I mean, like, Loz is killing it. I mean, Loz has always killed it. I think it was just a matter of time, right?
I think the transition between what Loz has done from being huge in the UK and then kind of that hustle to come over to the States and kind of build it here in the States and now where he's at, if you know what I mean, is just, it's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's cool, man. But I mean, that and like, who else? You got like Tyke. Tyke's always doing cool shit. Mm. Like, all the dudes are pretty, like, whether they're like famous or not, they all make like pretty inspiring shit.
Yeah.
Like, pretty, like, you know, shit that.
Well, the brand itself as well is doing like the whole, was it Charmy? Charmy and Night versus Night Bass or whatever the Charmy's label is. Is it Confessions?
Yeah.
Was it,
dude? I feel like that was my idea.
Because
like there was like a night 2 years ago, maybe 3 years ago, it was like before pandemic, and like it was like me, Marla, Charmy, and AC, and we were just like having like drinks after the show together, and I was like, you don't be crazy, you should do Night Bass versus Confession, do like AC versus Charmy, me versus Marla, you know what I mean, and just do all back to back, and. I mean, I'm not like, I'm actually like so stoked they did it and they invited me to go on the tour with them. It's just that like,
couldn't,
hard right now. You know what I mean? When you're trying to do your thing and
totally.
You know what I mean? But I was stoked to see that happen. And like, yeah, I felt like I was part of, cause at the time I was one of the only artists that was releasing on both labels.
Yeah.
So it just made sense to me. You know what I mean? And they had dropped their collab record, like Charmy and AC. And I was like, such a no brainer idea. Like this is a layup. You should do this. So it's cool that it came together in the end, and like the venues looked amazing, the shows looked amazing.
Shows looked unreal.
I wish I could have played them. Like, yeah.
Yeah, they looked unreal. So, it is amazing, especially.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Something that big that's kind of grown organically and kind of spit and sawdust. It's like it started as like a ground up label and kind of look where it's at now, and it's doing crazy things. And I've seen, well, like we've all seen it grow, if you know what I mean. We've seen the artist grow from it. It was kind of, even when I was in my Dirty Bird days, it was the same. Like you saw it slowly grow and grow and grow to the kind of to the level where it's at the same point as Dirty Bird.
Yeah, I think that was always one of the labels that was like the biggest inspiration to like everyone from Night Bass, is like the way their community is, the way the artists like hang out, and like I think we took a lot of that energy from Dirty Bird for sure.
Yeah, community is so important, especially with a label. It's just having the right people around you, right? It's just
that and having the right person in charge. Like you know, AC is like a one of a kind dude. Like I don't think if me or Loz had started the brand, it would be as successful as what it is, right? Like he's personable. Like he's super, like, I don't know, he's one of the nicest fucking people I know. It's just, that's the kind of person I think that, like, the success is because of him, you know what I mean?
Totally.
Like he's the reason why Nightbase is successful. Like, as much as the artists and like whatever we've done to contribute, at the core it's AC Slater. Yeah. And like, if he wasn't the person he was, like, it might not be where it is, because he's just one of those people where he gives everybody the fucking time of day, bro.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't matter. He's so nice and like unselfish in that way that like people like gravitate towards that and they want to do stuff for that. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I would do almost anything for Aaron. So just because I know he would get my back. You know what I mean?
He would do the same to you as well.
Yeah. And he wouldn't take that shit for granted. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. He's just one of those dudes, bro. Like, I think you see it with everybody around him, like Lars, Taiki, Sinden, Jack Beats. Like, we all fucking love him because of how he's just been there for you as a friend.
Yeah.
For years and years and years before anything, you know, it's like, he's just a real person, man.
So yeah. It's so important that as well. And I think it can actually get lost in the success of something, in everything, in anything, right? It doesn't necessarily have to be based on music. It's everything. When something becomes more successful, more money gets involved, and then that's when people kind of fall out and it gets a bit shit. But I think if your core foundation is as a human being is to be there for people, is super, so much more important than worrying about the money.
Yeah, I mean, he's never changed, you know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
He got successful and didn't change. So,
which is key.
That's sick, man. Like, I'll always wish the best for Nightbase and want to be part of it and do what I can and want to be involved, you know.
Yeah.
So
when was the transition for you where you were like, because it's like it for anyone where you came up on Nightbase, and I know you still do stuff with them and you still support them, but when was the transition where you're like, I need to do something myself? I need to kind of build something myself. What was that?
I think it was around the time we started our own label.
Yeah.
It made me go, okay, if you're going to start your own label, like, you need to be putting your shit out on your own label.
Yeah.
So it was never a conscious, like, I got to move away. Mm-hmm. It just felt like we were all growing. Like, we'd all come up together, and now we're at a point where we were all growing our own careers, like, even with like Loz now, you know what I mean? Like, he hasn't done anything on Nightbase for a while, but not because anything went wrong, because we're all at a point where we're trying to be like our own like ecosystem, our own artists, you know? So I don't think there was a point. I think I remember having a conversation with AC. We did like Nightbase City in Chicago, which was the first time it was like a festival stage with all of us.
Yeah.
So it was like AC, me, back-to-back Laws, like everyone from the label. And then we were discussing like doing one in LA, doing more, right? And I think the point I realized, like, not in a bad way, but it was just like when the agents couldn't agree on anyone's fees.
Yeah.
And I wasn't part of the conversation, but I was like, Aaron, what the fuck happened? Like, I want to play that shit. And they're like, yeah, so like budget wise like everyone's too big now, like, you guys got too big, like, we can't really, not that they couldn't afford it, but it's just like economically we can't make everyone happy, right? Like, you'll either like not be getting what your team wants you to get, or like we won't be able to put you on, you know what I mean?
Like, which for anybody that's not listening, like, we can only play certain markets a certain amount of times a year. And if LA is your biggest market where you earn the most money and you have the biggest fan base, taking a show that's going to be like half your fee is like a big kick in the teeth for your agents and your management and kind of everyone. Although as artists, we'd probably generally just do it because it's going to be the best party we're going to play. It's like still that, like, okay, we got to think business talk here.
Exactly. Like, what you want and what makes sense business-wise, they don't always match up at a certain point.
Totally.
I guess it's a good problem to have because it means you're growing. But the bad thing is, like, yeah, you can't always do everything on some homie stuff anymore.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I guess as you try to get bigger as an artist, you know, you want to be like, headlining. You want to be moving up festival lineups. And, like, part of that is kind of breaking out of the ecosystem that has a natural order to it, right? Like, I would never, ever dare to ask AC like to headline above him on a night based show. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Just like you probably wouldn't do that to Claude.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of like, how do you keep going forward, but also, you know, kind of be able to, I don't know, not, yeah. How do you grow without stepping on any toes? Like, it's not possible. Like, you're going to have to do something that isn't going to work out for someone else at some point. Right. So it's not even like a malicious thing. It's just like,
it's business. It's life.
Business. Yeah. Just business. So.
At the end of the day, there comes a point in everything that you kind of have to look after yourself. And I know it sounds really selfish, but it's not selfish. It's just life. It's you have to, like, you have your needs in your life. You have certain things, like AC has family. He has to look after them. Like, we all have things that are prioritized over anybody else, and that's ourselves. And that's not a selfish move at all. It's just how it is in everything.
Yeah, I agree. I think, like, the people that you really end up working with long term are the people that don't get, like, they don't get feelings over business things. Mm. You know what I mean? They're really good at keeping them separate. Like, it's got nothing to do with, like, how much I hate or like you. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And at the end of the day, like, I still go to AC's house and go hang out with his daughter, like, whatever. Like, because that's what is really important. You know what
so
I mean?
So much more important.
Or whether you can, like, support me on a show or blah, blah, blah. Like, bro, and that's the thing. I'll still go. You know what I mean? If I'm not playing, bro, you probably catch me there anyway.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that's the most important thing, bro. It's like, supporting you no matter what, like, you know.
I love that. There is something about just supporting your friends no matter what, and whether it's business. Yeah. And I think there's a lot of things in this industry where it can all stop. Like, there is strict business relationships where you are strictly in a relationship with somebody for the business. And then there's the relationships that started before you all got big. And to see everyone get big is the nicest feeling. Like, I don't know about you, but the one thing I want to do is become so successful where I could bring all my friends along with me and make them all super successful. That's literally my goal. Like,
yeah, me too.
And like
me
make too. And be able to get all my friends rich, if you know what I mean. Like, the reason why I want to earn more money in my shows is so that my team can earn more money. That's like, there comes a point where when you have good people around you, it's just about making sure everyone else around you is doing well.
Yeah, man. I like, during the pandemic, that was like an important thing for me. Mm-hmm. Is like, I still paid my team, even if it was like off streaming revenue or something, right? Just making sure like everybody was survive, like, you know, able to eat so that like, at the end of it, like, everybody would still be
there,
you know, there. Yeah. Like, I don't know. I agree. You want everybody else to be able to eat better as well. So,
yeah, I think there's a money talks in the grand scheme of things, but also it's like, it's just an extra bonus on top. Really?
Yeah.
It drives some relationships, but the relationships that aren't based around money, but then you can kind of help people out with the money. It's just nice. It's a nice incentive when people aren't expecting.
Honestly, the best thing about money for me was the ability to not have to do terrible shit anymore.
Yeah. What do you mean?
Just so we could survive, like take bad shows I didn't want to take or do remixes I didn't want to remix. Like, I used to do everything just to
make money,
you know, make sure we'd have money in the bank. Yeah. And now that I'm, you know, making more money, I can finally, right before pandemic was maybe like a year before the pandemic started was when I really felt like, oh, now I'm making decisions because like they're what I think I should be doing in my career, not what I got to do or I'm not going to make it till like next month. You know what I mean? Or 6 months down the line. Like, but that's when I really started having way more fun, honestly. Like, I mean, I always had fun, but I really felt like a weight lifted when I could just say no to every single fucking remix. And like, not for any other reason other than like, I don't get inspired doing remixes unless like it's something I was already going to do. Mm-hmm. Right. Like, but after Fly Kicks, like I was getting fucking remix offers every single fucking day for like crazy amounts of money. And I said no to all of them. I think the only one I took was like DJ Snake, the Made in France thing, yeah. Snake Charmy, yeah. That's the song. But I did that for free. I asked for no money for that because that's like something I wanted to do. Like, I don't mind not getting paid if that's what I want to do.
Yeah.
But I don't like when I have to do something that I don't want to do.
It's
and
the worst.
And then I'm just like, well, I need the check. I need the check. I need the check. So I'm going to force out a shit remix that I'm never going to play. Yeah. Just going to bury it after this. You know what I mean? Like, I hated doing that shit. Like, I hated it so much. So, yeah, you pretty much won't catch me do a remix ever again. I don't think.
I did two of those during lockdown.
Yeah, I mean, obviously I'll do them. Like, I'm remixing a song right now, but because I wanted to do it. So I jacked up the original offline and I started flipping it. But, you know, that's just like for me.
What you want to do. Set. Yeah, there is that thing, isn't it? But I don't know about you, but there was a point in my career where I looked very short term and didn't look at the bigger picture. That's like, okay, this is like 2-3 grand for a remix. Like right now, 2-3 grand would be great. But if I, in the grand scheme of things, if I look back at it, like 2-3 grand in 5 years time is not worth it right now. But I think it's just very easy in the moment to be like, yeah, I need that money. So let's just do it. And it's definitely not worth it in the long term at all.
No.
But I think it's so hard to see that when you're a new artist or when you're growing, because hey, 2 grand is a lot of money.
Hell yeah. Like, nah, you need it. But that's the thing, when you're new and you're not willing to do like all those things, like I'm not sure you'll make it.
Yeah.
Like you got to scrap, like you got to get scrappy with it. Like you got to be willing to do shit you don't want to do. Like if you're going to hold the bar too high and like turn your nose down at things, like I'm not really sure you have what it takes. You know what I mean? Like, cause think about you got to have this certain amount of like tenacity and motivation inside yourself to like be okay with all the traveling, the late nights, the like, you know what I mean? Like this, there's a certain point where like, this isn't that fun anymore. And like, you know what I mean? To be able to sit in a studio for 8 hours a day, you know, to be able to then pack your bags, travel all night, like blah, blah, blah. Like you got to get gritty. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like there's you're never going to go like, unless you even like maybe a craze, right? And then you go straight from like nothing to like a jet or some shit like that. Right. But that's never really like.
How many people really do that? Maybe one every 2 years, 3 years, not even
exactly.
That.
Exactly. The reality is you'll be putting out a lot of records that don't get recognized.
Yeah.
You'll be doing a lot of remixes just to survive. And you'll be traveling like fucking shit. And you'll be up, you'll be taking the cheapest flights you can at the worst times just to make the most amount of money on a show. And nobody will see that. You know what I mean? They'll just see you there partying, having a good time. They'll assume you're getting paid a lot and that life's great. But like, they don't see all the other shit. So
it's funny because obviously you're similar to me where you're not from America. And do you have a green card?
No, I'm still on visas.
Still on visas. So your tax is the same as mine. Although you'll be taxed. Yeah, it's pretty rough. But it's really funny like when you first get going in the industry and you are like, oh, you're gonna get 3 grand for this show, and you're like, damn, this is a fuck ton of money. Like, this is the most money I've ever had in my life doing a show. And then you're like, okay, then you take all the splits out, and then you take all the tax out, and then you take all your travel out, and you're like left with like $400, and you're like, still great that I'm earning $400, but from 3 grand to $400, you're like, fuck, where did this go? And that never ends at all. And you're just like, the more money you get, your expenses, I don't know about you, but for me, my expenses generally stay the same. So there comes a threshold where you get to that level where you're like, okay, I'm actually making really good money doing this, when you get to a certain fee level. But fuck me, like, it takes time.
Yeah.
It takes
so I definitely have hit that point, but then it was like, okay, like, you need to start bringing more people on the road now for things, right? So now I travel with a TM and a photographer.
Yeah.
So like my expenses almost doubled. Went up again.
Yeah.
But you're right. There is a threshold where that's going to end, right? Like, yeah. Hopefully by the time you get everything sorted. And I mean, not everybody needs that extra stuff on the road, right? Yeah. They're just like the extra frills for me, because like it takes a little bit of pressure off like me having to worry about content on socials, and it takes the pressure off me having to worry about like travel and all that other shit, so yeah. I can do other things.
Does your TM book all your flights, does all your advancing and everything as well?
Yeah, I'm pretty lucky that everybody around me does almost everything now. Mm. My label is running itself.
Yeah.
My merch is running itself. Like, my assistant's upstairs, like, packing merch now.
Yeah.
And then we have TM, photographer, like, everything's kind of running itself, which is great. But it's also because, you know, I'm trying to, like, I could probably do more business than most other DJs, you know, outside of music too. Yeah. And so it's kind of, my team steps in to kind of help me, because I bring opportunities on that end too. To them, so
yeah,
that's why they probably do maybe more than other artists.
Well, I think
probably get from their
team, I think, you know? It's important to have that set up if you're interested in doing more things, where a lot of artists aren't. A lot of artists are just purely interested in doing straight up music,
whereas
what you're doing with NFT stuff and kind of all of that, like, it's extra money.
Yeah, my team eats off everything I work on.
Yeah.
So whether it's like crypto stuff, whether it's music stuff, like, they're kind of like help me execute a lot of things I need done, or like will tee up the meetings with people I need to talk to. So yeah, everything's cool. Like, you know, we obviously have operations in gaming and in NFTs and crypto, and it really just allows me to be able to like bring in more money and bring in more business on every end, you know. Yeah.
Just more creative. Do you work on the creative of everything?
Yeah. I mean, like, there's certain things like with cover art, right? Like, I have like three guys, and the main guy is like Nick Copper. And like, I like his style anyway. You know what I mean? So like, I kind of give him a bit of creative freedom, because he's also creative. And I just approve everything as well. You know what I mean? So as long as I get final approval before it goes out, then like, that's all I need, really.
When in your career was it that you got everyone doing everything you wanted, which allowed you the space to do what you want to do? Because there's a point, isn't there, when you're kind of coming up where you can't afford to pay people and you have to do it yourself. Yeah. What was it, the switch for you, apart from just earning money, when was it for you where you were like, I need other people to kind of help me with this?
It was now, actually. Yeah. Like, the last few months. Mm. Like, I guess I'd done pretty well off NFTs and crypto.
Yeah.
And I'm doing well off my DJ fee.
Yeah.
And my team could kind of see, like, it was impossible for me to like maintain both. Yeah. Like, I think if people are following me online, it's probably part of the reason they're not seeing me online as much, is because I'm out there like taking meetings. Like, I had like, you know, a whole week of meetings the other week with like people from psilocybin companies all the way to Netflix show producers. And I think my team could just see like, hey, he's not going to be able to keep both these up.
Yeah.
And I have the money to bring on more people. So it just kind of made sense. You know what I mean? It's like, if I can earn more money, if I can pay someone to do that part of the job and then go and earn more money overall, then that's what business is, like, good business is, right? Totally. Like, Amazon started with Jeff Bezos, and now the guy has like millions of employees. Yeah. Like, it's important to be able to grow your team with people, you know, and like bring people, like, delegate tasks, you know, like, you don't have to like physically do everything. If you're like a good operator, you can like manage it all, right? So yeah, just delegating tasks,
I think
simple stuff.
Yeah, I think it's also that thing that's just like music, is if you need a guitar section in a record, you go find a good guitarist. You don't try and learn the guitar.
Like, 100%. Like, yo, that's like the biggest quote, like, that's like basically what Quincy Jones said in an interview once. And like, that shit stuck with me forever. Because like, you'll never be the best piano player. You'll never be the best guitar player if you're not like already on your way there. Like, there's no chance. So
we don't have enough time to do.
Yeah.
We do have enough time, but we have to make time. And by making time, it means that we either take time out of life that we want to do doing something else, or we're just so fixed on doing some of the other things that it doesn't get there, really.
100. I read this thing and it was like, in one person's lifetime, they only really have enough time to be good at one thing.
Yeah.
And it's people that are good at more than one thing usually became good at that one thing first and then started doing the other things. So like, if you think you can be good at two or three things in life, like, it's just not going to be possible. Like,
that's the thing I struggle with the most, is that I want to do so many things, and always want to do so much shit, and it actually affects everything else. And I called Ryan the other day and was like, dude, I just can't do all of this. There's just so much going on that I'm like, I just can't carry on with it. And it affects the one thing that actually is the reason why we're doing what we're doing, and that's making music.
Making music. Yeah, exactly. But I also think that's a great trait to have, honestly. Like, it's problematic in that, like, you know, you could get stuck in a place where you're not really accomplishing all that much. But honestly, like, now's the time to try. Like, right? Like, before you get old, before you, like, 50, 60, 70, like, you know, you can't really move around as much or whatever. Yeah. Like, now's the time to YOLO life and, like, 100%. Try every fucking thing. And, like, I try to live like that, like, in general. And I think that's why, like, some things worked out for me, you know, like, because I just took the risk. And, like, I don't know. I, like, obviously, like, this isn't the type of thing, like, please, whoever's watching this, don't take this as, like, actual advice. But, like, at the end of the day, if you invest a bunch of money somewhere and you lose it all, right? Like, okay, mentally that could fuck you, but you're only really letting yourself do that to yourself, right? If you go, look, 40 grand's nothing, I can fucking earn that back.
Yeah.
Or like whatever, and like power through that initial sadness because you'll be sad. But like at the end of the day, it's not like, you know what I mean? Like what's the worst that can happen if you're already not in a great situation? Mm. You know what I mean? Unless you're in a place where you had $20 million and lost it all, right? Like, I'm talking about if you're like just regular, why not take a fucking stab? But you know, if you don't feel life is really going the way you want it to go, just fucking roll the dice.
But I also think it's all, I don't really know what the word is, but it balances out, right? If you've earned 20 million, you can earn another 20 million. If you earn 10 grand, you can earn another 10 grand. If you've written 10 records, you can go write another 10 records if one of those records doesn't hit. Like, it's just that taking the risk that I think I can get stuck in the rut of like not taking the risks because it's too short term for me. Like, at the end of the day, we all know how long things take. And if you're going to spend 50 grand on an investment, it doesn't necessarily come back into like hundreds of thousands of dollars next week. It's a process. Yeah. Sometimes it does. Sometimes you're lucky, right? But it's very rare that happens. And I think it can be very easy for me to be like, nah, I just got to keep doing what I'm doing. But then realizing in the 5 years down the line, if you just keep doing what you're doing, sometimes it actually doesn't pay off, and it's not what you shouldn't keep doing what you're doing. You need to change. You need to do something different.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely agree that, like, you know, for me, I'm not going to like throw away my music career because I've spent most of my life working towards it, you know?
Well, also you love it.
Yeah. And I love it, you know, like it's not something I ever did for money. So it's fine. But taking risks in life, definitely don't take risks with money. You know what I mean? Like, if you only have a certain amount of money, like, don't fucking YOLO it all. But what I more meant was like risks in life, right? Like, it's like, if you're too focused on having a plan B, like, plan A never going to work.
Totally.
Like, I almost live my life with no plan B now because I'm like, plan A is going to work. Yeah. There's only one plan. You know what I mean? And that's to make it, make all this shit work and be rich, like, from doing it.
Yeah.
And I don't know, when you just live with a backup plan, when you live with this idea that, like, you know, like, nah, I don't know. I'm a bit too, like, maybe I'm a bit too stubborn like that sometimes, like, personally. Like, I'll just be so headstrong at, like, I'm doing this. So, like, it almost doesn't matter if I fail or if people think I'm an idiot or whatever. Yeah. You know what I mean? Because, like, internally, like, I just needed to do that. Yeah. You know? So.
No, I respect that a lot. And I'm similar. I would say in the last, like, 6 months, I've mentally not been, like, in the right mindset, where it's, like, been more of a, like, a negative mindset where it's, like, fuck, what if all this goes? Like, I have nothing. Like, the only qualification I've had outside of music is I was a lifeguard.
Damn, you're a lifeguard?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
And that's worked in a fish and chip shop. Like, there's, like, literally nothing else I could fall back on, which means that, like, I have to make this work. But sometimes it can be, it also, for me, and I don't know about you, there's also days where I'm like, fuck, that's scary that there's nothing else. Like, I'm fucked. If this goes to shit, I'm fucked. And
the scarier thing for me about music is, like, it's subjective.
Yeah.
You know, like there are songs that are probably really big songs that, like, people don't think are hit songs.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's not, there's no criteria that says this is a hit song, that isn't a hit song, that isn't. Like, it's super subjective. So, like, it's one of those things. It's not like going to work on a like construction site where, yeah, like, the more time you put in, you can see physically what you're doing. Like, it's the proof is in front of you. Like, in this industry, like, sometimes the shit you build, like, doesn't get seen for years and years and years, you know? And, like, sometimes the records you think are good are trash. Sometimes records you think are trash are good. Like, it's a bit like just shooting into a fucking pond. Do you know what I mean? And hoping you hit a fish.
100%. And I think also it's, now there's so many more ways people listen to music than buying a vinyl or buying a CD or downloading a record off Beatport. Like, there's so many outlets. So everything's kind of spread out to a certain extent, and you have, like, powers at those streaming services, powers at those download services that control what's going to be a hit and what's not.
Yo, exactly. I mean, that's the subjectivity thing, right?
Yeah.
Like, you might have written a fucking hit record and everyone around you thinks it's a hit, but if that one person at Spotify controlling a playlist, like, doesn't agree, then you don't.
Mm-hmm.
You just got to move on.
We've all had that on a monthly basis, right? Like, we've all got records that, well, we release records because we think they're going to do well. We don't release records thinking they're going to do shit. So we have I can't speak for you, but I have expectations when I'm going to release a record that it's going to do pretty well.
Mm-hmm. Same.
You get a bunch of feedback saying this is a fucking banger. Your mates that will tell you the honest opinion, they're like, yeah, this is a banger. Your fans are like, on social media, yeah, this is a banger. Comes out on Spotify, Apple, Amazon, they don't give a fuck about it. And you're like,
yeah,
damn, it's cold.
Yeah, that's probably the worst part about living in this era, honestly, is that, like, you know, your visibility is, at the end of the day, very centralized in a few hands. You know, and I mean, there's outliers to that, obviously, like, there's exceptions to the rule, but it's a tough grind, man. Like, that is, making music is the easy part.
Yeah,
to me, it's everything else that is the challenge, you know, like, because I spent, like, the good early part of my career not doing shows, not, like, you know what I mean? I was just making shit in my bedroom. So making music has never been the hard part for me, in a way. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's kind of always been the sort of, like, the easiest stuff.
Yeah.
And, like, actually getting it out there, having to promote it, having to, like, I don't know, just, like, think of all those techniques, like we said earlier, like, with paying for Instagram pages or blah, 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 paying for posts. Like, you got to out-strategize everyone else around you. Like, it's got nothing to do with, like, are you doing good marketing? It's like, is your marketing better than theirs? Yeah, exactly. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. That's the worst thing about it is, like, as much as people say, like, you can't compare yourself or you can't get competitive or can't, you know, unfortunately, you're forced to. You know what I mean? Because, like, there is a running order on the Spotify playlist. Mm-hmm. And the song at number one does get more streams. Yeah. It's maths. Like, so I don't know. It's kind of one of those things. Like, you're being told one thing, but they're not, that's not how they treat you, bro. Like, at all. So.
Not at all. It's like everything. At the end of the day, we want to be successful. And how do we get there? And it's the question. It's on this podcast, like, you're the 103rd episode. And
hell yeah.
Like, you have to keep going. But now, even with this podcast, like, with my team, is that, like, we're like, okay, we've done a lot of fucking episodes. We've got a lot of really fucking good interviews or conversations. I don't really like to call them interviews because it's more of a conversation about life. But it's like, how do we then get this to the masses? Because there's a certain level that we can, with our following, get it to. And there's so many people that I know would benefit from listening to this podcast and would want to listen to this podcast. But then it's, how do you get there? How do you get from all of the, like, every other podcast out there? There's fucking millions of them. And this isn't necessarily the best podcast on the internet. I know it's not. But you can guarantee that there's a lot more people out there that would want to listen to it. They just don't have a fucking clue about it.
Yeah, 100%, man. I actually think that's a problem that every, like small business owners,
everything,
man,
yeah.
Like, I can't imagine, like, I'm seeing, like older people running small businesses trying to do TikToks. You know what I mean? Like, just because they feel pressured to have to do something to get viral, to get their product out, to get their business name out. Yeah. Like, well, yeah, I feel like it's kind of like everybody's struggling and you're kind of seeing all this sort of, like, just people just, I mean, it's just being extreme, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's doing the craziest dance when you're DJing, so everybody watches and reposts that video. I mean, like, people like Salvatore Ganache, like, a great example, where, like, the dude is not, like, he's a pretty smart dude, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, he's not 100%. Like,
he knows what he's
like
doing.
It's yeah, exactly. It's just, like, very programmed in a way, you know? And but the trick is, I mean, that's the magic trick, isn't it? To make it seem like it's not. Like,
yeah, and I think also there's a lot of people that, a lot of us aren't like that, right? There's characters in all walks of life. And like look at Fish. Let's say, for instance, like, Fish is, he's a character. And like, I wouldn't put you and I in that same category where we can be that type of person.
The thing with his is, it's a lot less uncalculated. Like,
yeah,
that's actually
just
how
him.
It is,
you know? Yeah, yeah,
I
mean, exactly.
Like,
yeah.
Not saying that other people aren't actually how they are, but, like, you know, you can see when someone's been more calculated at how they're going to roll out their career, how they're going to roll out a song, how they're going to do that. Like, man, for as long as I've known Fish, he's just been the same fucking idiot. Like, really,
organic.
Like, he's that dude. Yeah, like, he really is that dude. So, like, I don't really mind that, right? Like,
I think it's authenticity. Authenticity is, everyone sees through it eventually.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, to be honest, I don't even mind the calculated thing because I understand where people are coming from. It's like, if you don't have that much, like, not saying that people don't have no personality, but if you're the kind of person that is maybe, like, naturally awkward, right?
Mm.
Like, coming up with a mask and a gimmick, like, so that you can actually get those eyes and get the attention. I understand why people would do that. You know what I mean? Like,
I get it.
Personally,
it's
not for me. Yeah. But, like, in order to get attention now and the quickest way possible, okay, if I was going to start a new name tomorrow, yeah, you probably wouldn't see my face, or I would be doing something that's, like, so stand out. You would see me, right? Like, I mean, it's the same kind of, like, with Timmy Trumpet, like, right now, where it's like, you know, has a whole, like, smash the bottle on his head thing. And you know what I mean? It's like cues from, like, Steve almost,
yeah,
where it's like throwing a cake, like, you, it's like the entertainment factor, the showmanship and all that shit, like the wow factor, like the attention grabbing factor, like, yeah, I'm not mad at people that do that at all, like, because I understand, like,
I respect
how else
it.
Do you fucking get looked at right now, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I respect,
like,
it,
if I was coming out, yeah, I actually just respect it more because I don't have the energy to constantly be like that. Like, I only have the energy to be me. You know what I mean? Like, fuck, bro. Like, having to do anything else is just like, I'm already fucking running thin. So,
and it's always been around. I think people are like, this is a current day thing, but it's always been there. Like, look at, go back to like the old punk days with the old punk bands. It was exactly the same. Like, what crazy shit can we do to like make sure that everyone knows about us? Like, how do we get on the front page of every newspaper? Like, how do we do this? It's always been around.
Hell yeah. When rappers climb on scaffoldings and shit, exactly. They jump off balconies, exactly. Like Travis Scott, Uzi Vert. I mean, they're doing it because it's a headline, you know?
Yeah.
So.
And yeah, I think it just needs specific people to do that, or a specific business idea. And I do respect it. I'm not always in love with it because I'm like, we're in the fucking music industry, and there are parts of me that's like, fuck's sake, guys, like, just fucking write good music. But that is the business, right? It's like,
yeah, it's not for me personally, but yeah. Like, you know what? Like, at least those people, like, at least the people that are doing it, like, they have a respect for people like us too. You know
totally.
What I mean?
Totally, man.
I mean, I'm sure there's some that don't, but all the ones I know that are like kind of a bit more characters and stuff, like they're always like DMing me or texting me or like saying some shit. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
They don't discredit what we do because, like, I don't know, like, because
we're not the same.
I feel like we're the producers that kind of these new ideas kind of spawn from. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I mean, I feel like in my career I've had so many like sounds or ideas or things jacked from me. You know what I mean? Like. But I don't know. I guess that's if you're the producer's favorite producer, like, type scenario, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like I kind of been in a little bit of that category.
Yeah. It's not bad. I think it can be sometimes quite frustrating when everyone's playing your records and you're not playing the shows. That, like, there comes a point in those career at the beginning of your career, more so, is where when everyone's playing your records and you're not there. But that's also the start of the career, and I think when people copy your records, I think it's the biggest form of flattery, really, because we're the ones that are coming up with the record ideas, and realistically we can come up with plenty more. It's just we've just got to work for it, and we've got to push in the studio for it, and we're the ones that allow other artists to copy that at the end of the day.
Yeah, for sure. Like, I always found it flattering, so it was fine. I mean, you know, it is annoying, like you said, to not get, like, I had a situation in Vegas where I was playing the same day as Snake in one casino, and Snake was playing the other, and at the end of my set basically got in trouble for playing my records, and Snake is sending me videos of him at the other club, like, playing my song.
What?
And I couldn't play my songs at this. Yeah.
Why? It was... What? Fuck those people, whoever said that.
Yeah. I mean, it just comes back to, yeah, I mean, that's when I really realized, like, okay, being a producer's favorite producer, like, it's all good and all, but, like, you really need to have a name. You know what I mean?
You have to.
Once you have a name, like, nobody's saying shit to you anymore.
Yeah.
And so that's when I was just like, you know what, I'm going to focus on that, like, just building my name.
You have to. It's so important. You've got to look after you, man. Got him.
Yeah.
Mate, I'm 100. About to piss my pants. So let's wrap this motherfucker up.
Yeah, man.
Before we leave, is what have you got coming up?
Anything? Shit. We got, like, Ultra in a few weeks, so I'm probably just working towards that. Cool. And we got a new single coming out, which I held off the album because I felt like it was going to get lost on there.
Yeah.
And so that's the thing, I guess, with the album, a lot of people kind of expecting me to be, like, off the radar for a little bit. But, like again, that really was a bookend for me. And now I can, like, start rolling out all the shit I want to roll out. So, yeah, I'd expect more new music.
Amazing.
Yeah, so the next one will be around Ultra, and we'll start promoting that and then just work on the set.
Cool, man. So, thanks for coming on, man. It's been good to chat.
Thanks for having me, bro. That was awesome. Cool.
Yeah, peace out, man. Keep safe. See you soon.
Hell yeah, I'll see you soon, bro.
Right. And that's a wrap. Hope you enjoyed it. Don't forget to hit subscribe. Give us some reviews. Send it to your mates. Keep safe. Have a great week. See you next time.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.